Welcome back to another episode of Resorters Radio Podcast. In this edition, Greg and I will review all the latest Disney news and rumors, dive into the past and future of Disney Hollywood Studios, and, we're also joined by a special guest, former Walt Disney Imagineer Brian Collins. It's time to get your ears on. This edition of Resort Ears Radio is next. Okay, like I say every time, Greg, we have to do something about that 5 second delay of doing that.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
What are you going to do?
Greg, what's going on over there?
Not much, man. Excited about tonight's show, though. This is going to be pretty cool.
It is. Let's try to get through this fast because I want to save all the time for Brian that we have. What's going on with Twitter and everything and the followers?
This past couple weeks have been going great. Thank you to our new listeners on Podbean and on TuneIn Radio, which is new for us. So thanks for listening on there. Also, just got a Periscope, so check us out on Periscope if you're on there. Mike's been doing a little test stuff, and actually I'm gonna be down in the parks in a couple weeks, so we'll probably try to get some stuff down there. And
yeah, the thing with the Periscope, I'm just hoping the camera shuts off and it's not just going all the time, but. It is pretty nifty. I do like it. That way we can get out small shows or small different things if whatever comes up. It's the weirdest thing, though, because when you actually tape a Periscope thing, like as far as, like, I don't know if I see something, whatever, and I want to put it to Resort Ears, it goes to it. But all of a sudden, like last night around 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm doing a promo for tonight's show, and there's 30 people listening live that come up, and then there's like one replay, and I just don't understand how that all works.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all a mystery. So, and we're on live on Mixlr too tonight. So, thank you folks for listening in on Mixlr.com to the show.
All right.
So and, what's going on tonight?
Yeah, nothing yet with iTunes. Sorry, folks. They're not biting our apple, so to speak. Let's see. So. Tonight's show, of course, we'll discuss all your WW news and rumors, and we're excited to have Brian Collins, like I said before, who was a former Walt Disney Imagineer, to join the show. So why don't we get into news and rumors, and, I'll start off with a little bit of Disney Springs, or as I still like to call it, Downtown Disney, because I don't think that'll ever die. They are adding more food and beverage options with Dockside Margaritas and Morimoto Asia. Dockside Margaritas. That's the first one let's talk about. The latest waterside bar at Disney Springs will open tomorrow, April 23rd, which by the time this goes out will be late, but that's every day. So set to look like a Florida fruit stand from the 1960s, Dockside Margaritas will offer handcrafted margaritas and local Floridian craft brews with waterside seating in the marketplace of Disney Springs. It's going to be across from the Marketplace Co-op near World of Disney. The other one is Morimoto Asia, and of course, you remember Chef Morimoto was part of the Iron Chef series on the Food Network. Back in culinary school, I tried to be like him until I cut my finger. That's a true story for another day. They will be opening this summer and offer Pan-Asian dining in what was formerly the Mannequin's Dance Hall. Ooh, yeah, I messed that up about three times yesterday. Building on Pleasure Islands, celebrity Chef Morimoto's new restaurant in Orlando will join the Boathouse, just opening last week in Disney Springs. What you got on these two, Greg?
So, Dockside Margaritas sounds pretty cool. Florida fruit stand from the 60s?
I could find like four of those when I go to see my girlfriend's grandparents in the Palm Coast.
Yeah.
Trying to see where they're going
but,
with that.
But the whole like Floridian craft brew thing next to the water, you know, makes you just want to like get an ice cold beer and just kind of kick back under a palm shade and just chill. So, yeah, that's pretty cool though. And obviously, you know, Morimoto Asia will be great once that opens up and joins the Boathouse as new dining options down there too, which is much, much needed, and we'll get into that in another show at another time. But
absolutely.
For sure.
All right, so we move on to a little notice for Epcot there. Innovations West will temporarily close on April 30th to begin preparing for a new experience, in quotations. According to Disney press release, the current tenants are leaving and the space will be prepared for something new. But exact details about the exhibit's future have not yet been known. What do you think about this one?
So, you know, obviously the sponsors are, you know, their contracts are up, which makes sense. And Raytheon's one of the sponsors. Their contracts are done. It's time, you know, we've talked about East and West, inventions, East and West. I think it's time these things you get a fresh start. I don't know that maybe this won't be what it is now. I think it may be something completely different. A Guardians of the Galaxy attraction, maybe. I know Marvel has the contract with Universal and the whole deal where, you know, you can't have Marvel attractions or rides or experiences on the East Coast. It has to be at Disneyland, but Guardians actually wasn't in that contract. So, potentially, maybe there's some kind of a Guardians of the Galaxy attraction coming down the pipe. I don't know. That's just a complete speculation, but...
Yeah, you know what? I'm all about change. That was Walt's dream, and every fan is. I just hope that they don't put in a, God forbid, another Frozen ride in there or anything like that. I mean, now Captain EO is also kaputs, so to speak. We'll see if that actually comes back or not. That's being able to show the Tomorrowland trailers, which, by the way, looks like a great movie.
Tomorrowland's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to that.
I just hope they keep with the whole... The Frozen thing just really screwed with the whole idea of Epcot in my mind and a lot of people's minds. And maybe that's something we can ask Brian later on in the show, but the thing is like, it needs to keep, especially when you first walk into Epcot, it needs to keep that, like, World's Fair kind of exhibit thing. Like, even if they reach out to, like, a Google or an Apple and say, listen, go into Innovations West and have, you know, 24 little robots walking around.
Right.
You know, I'm cool with that because it's not a movie or a fake land or fake characters.
Right.
It's actually something that we can use in the next, you know, 10, 20 years. That's
right.
What the whole idea of the World's Fair was. That's why Walt made all these... Innovations and imaginary and everything to conceive and do these things.
Yep.
All right, so Greg, one more news story left because
we're
going to cut this a little short. I'm sorry, folks, we want to get to Brian. Go ahead, what you got?
Disney's Hollywood Studios, oddly enough, and that it meshes well with our feature discussion today on the studios, but apparently a new flex space theater at the studios may be coming online. I guess there's recently been some permits filed by Disney to include the plans of outline of a new theater space over on Sunset Boulevard between Rock and Roller Coaster and Tower of Terror. Backstage area has been previously used to host Darth's Maul during the Star Wars weekend, which is coming up in May, and also other events like the old...
Can you say it again, Greg? It's Darth Maul or Darth's Maul?
Darth's Maul. It's his mall. You know, Darth Maul's mall. Right. Yeah.
Proceed.
Sorry. Yeah, anyway, ESPN, the weekend was over there. Anyway, this could be a nice new piece and may indicate that the park's other flex space, which is the Premier Theater over on Streets of America, may be soon closing, perhaps. The Frozen sing-along currently is in the being relocated from that theater to the Hyperion Theater, which was previously home to the American Idol experience, as you remember, which closed last summer. And the closure of the Premier Theater without a replacement would leave the park short of locations for other groups like high school bands and special events and what have you. So it's a pretty significant development when you look at the studios. And obviously, you know, things like Star Wars Land maybe coming down the pipe, that sort of thing. And, you know, that hopefully will be announced in the coming months. So pretty interesting story, interesting time, I think, too. Right before Star Wars weekend, which comes up third weekend in May. So, I don't know. Interesting story.
Yeah. Until they slap a new name on it and start filling some space, it's just kind of unfortunately existing right now.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's sad.
Right.
So, all right. So, why don't we go into our feature discussion with Brian? He can finally take the mute button off. Sorry about that, buddy. All right. So... our feature discussion today is going to be Disney's Hollywood Studios. They look back at the beginning and what lies ahead for its future. And what better to do that with than a former Imagineer, Brian Collins? We're very lucky today. For the past 20 years, Brian has earned his stripes in a variety of creative positions within the ranks of corporate America. He is, among other things, an award-winning writer and video producer and a former Walt Disney Imagineer, where he helped create the magic for virtually all of Disney's Florida theme parks. Today, Brian heads up a consulting firm coaching small businesses on entrepreneurship, and he also runs WDWWithMe.com, a website where Brian offers professional tour experiences at the Walt Disney World theme parks from the perspective of a former Imagineer. We are simply thrilled and honored to have Brian join us on the show. Brian, how are you doing tonight?
Boy, that sounds like a really impressive guest you're going to have on tonight.
I don't know who you are talking about. I guess we should spill the beans and say that me and Greg actually did radio in college, so together at the same college. Yeah. So there you go. You deserve it.
Thank you. I'm very happy and thrilled to be here. I'm just going to correct you a little bit. It's WD with me, not WDW.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But when you look at it, I made it look like WDW. It's WD with me.
All right, WD with me.
So, got to get the plug, the shameless plug in. You know?
You can do that all night. Does not matter.
Thank you.
We'll plug it for you, too, on our shows.
All right, guys.
All right, Greg, anything...
So I think to start off, Brian, you mind just telling us kind of how you got started at the Walt Disney Company?
Well, you know, shipwrecked off the coast of Africa, raised by apes. You may have seen the movie they made about me. And just kind of went from there.
It was the Anatomic Apes, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The Jungle, right, the jungle Cruise.
Put that check down. Okay, animatronic ape maker.
So, how did I wind up at Disney? So, I was working in Miami. My first job out of school, I was working in Miami as a video producer. And I was producing the in-flight entertainment for Eastern Airlines, if you remember them. And Eastern Airlines went bankrupt around that time. So, having been born and raised in the Sunshine State, always wanted to work for Disney. I've been going there since the park opened with my parents in 1972. And, you know, what kid doesn't walk through the parks and look around and go, wouldn't it be cool to be one of the guys that actually designs this place? Didn't know, obviously, back then about Imagineering or what an Imagineer was, but, you know, it's like every little kid's dream. So, flash forward to when I got laid off from my job in Miami. I moved up to Orlando, moved in with my brother in his apartment because he was living in Orlando. And thought that Disney would have that big corner office just waiting for me, overlooking the Magic Kingdom. And to make a long story short, I wound up checking in guests at the front desk of the Contemporary Resort. So that was my very first job at Disney. And the timing for me, though, happened. It was really a classic case of really being in the right place at the right time, because in 1989, they were just building the Disney MGM Studios. Michael Eisner was CEO. There was a lot of exciting growth happening in theme parks. And it wasn't long before I moved on from behind the desk of the Contemporary. Initially, started doing some other assignments in the company where I was like writing for the company Paper Eyes and Ears. I was actually start producing some videos, some in-house corporate videos for them. I was actually standing in the preview of the Great Movie Ride when they were doing preview rides of it, testing it out. And the guy in front of me happened to be a production assistant at the studios at the time, because back then it was actually a real working studio and there was a lot of TV and movie and other production going on. So he and I just start to chat. And again, to make a very long story short, he wound up bringing me over as a production assistant at the studios. So I started doing that for a while and just started doing some internal networking. And one day I went to the HR person who I was very friendly with, and I told her, I said, you know, I've always wanted to work for Imagineering. Can you hook me up? And she's like, well, you and like a million other people. Yeah. But I kept bugging her. And was persistent, and finally, I think just to get rid of me, she gave me the name of a creative director over there who I went to go speak to. And they had a little trailer on the back lot of the studios. He gave me like a test assignment to go out and rewrite the spiel for the walking tour of the animation studio. And again, back then, the animation studio was an active animation studio. They were supporting films like The Little Mermaid and Who Framed Roger Rabbit and you know, other films. So I rewrote that spiel. I guess he liked it. He gave me another assignment, and, you know, that turned into a three-month assignment. Then he brought me back for another short-term three-month assignment, and eventually was able to parlay that into getting hired on as a full-time show writer with Disney Imagineering.
Wow.
piece of cake.
Well, it seems like we talked a little bit off the air how, like, what I would love to do is get into front desk with Disney and then get up to manager in the hotels and try to use my personality to make it just a bit more fan-friendly. So, anyhow, that's awesome. It seems like I ever got the opportunity. There's just so many different ways to go in the Disney family when you get down there, which way you can go. That's awesome. So, let me ask you, personally, what is it like literally creating Disney magic? I mean, that's something that, as fans, we can only kind of, you know, dream about, but you did it.
You know, that's really kind of an interesting question because I never really kind of thought of it in those perspectives. I joke with my wife and my kids a lot, you know, because they're completely unimpressed of my Disney Imagineering pedigree. Because when you live here in Orlando, everyone and their mother seems to work for Disney, so it's like not that big a deal.
Right.
But what I will tell you is that I was acutely aware once I got that WDI name tag, how special and how lucky that was. And I think most of the people that work in WDI feel that way too. And not in a condescending kind of a way, like, you know, we're better than anyone else, but, you know, I certainly felt very privileged to be able to be doing what I, you know, have wanted to do all my life. And the nature of the work is just so unique and so cool. You can't help but, you know, just love going to work every day. Wow. It was a thrill.
That's amazing. I mean, wow. I hope I get the chance, like I said, to experience that at some point in my life. But anyhow, what we're going to do now, Brian, is we're going to kind of go and we're going to take the Disney Hollywood Studios from the past. I'm going to have Greg just kind of give an overview of some people who maybe they're new to the Disney thing, maybe they're not in depth as like the three of us sitting here really are. He's going to give us just a quick little overview of just kind of the park past, just a little bit, just to kind of set the stage. And then when we come back after that, Greg's going to kind of just let you dive into your role with Hollywood Studios and then beyond.
Yep.
So, Greg, why don't you start that?
Yeah, so, you know, Brian, like you were saying, you know, Michael Eisner, obviously in his role back then in the early 80s, and I think, you know, the history that, you know, I read his kind of love for filmmaking and Hollywood, you know, obviously with him being at Paramount before he came to Disney, he had this idea to create, it was called Great Moments of the Movies, and there was attraction, I think a movie-themed pavilion they were going to do for Epcot, which turned into a full, they said, wait, you know, we can actually make a full park out of this. And also knowing that just down the road, you know, Universal was creating this giant theme park monster that, you know, was going to compete with Disney. So, May 1st, 1989, Disney's MGM Studios opens. Brian, like you said, you know, feature production facility for TVs, movies, radio. The animated features, even more recently, Mulan, Lilo and Stitch, and Brother Bear all produced there. Disney Channel programming, Mickey Mouse Club, Teen Win, Lose, or Draw, Ernest Saves Christmas feature film, the 1988 feature film. And today, it actually is the number 5 most visited park in America, I think number 8 in the world, so... just a quick background. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of that, Brian. But
that sounds about right.
Yeah, but pretty impressive. One of the things that this is skipping ahead, but you know, one of the questions that I had and I wanted to ask you about was the whole production facility side of the studios, and obviously that's gone away in recent years. What was that like? I mean, when you know, and
it was very cool. Like I said, before I started working as an Imagineer, I actually worked as a production assistant at the studio, so I got to, and even when I was at WDI, there was a lot of opportunity for me to, because my office was actually backstage at the studio, so there was a lot of opportunity for me to be on sets and stuff. Mickey Mouse Club was in full-blown production then, so, you know, getting to see, you know, young Musketeers who went on to bigger and better things. Right. You know, it's right. kind of cool to look back now. There always seemed to be something kind of interesting going on. There was, I remember a TV miniseries, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was had to do with the Supreme Court, and they rebuilt the inside of the Supreme Court chambers on one of our sets. And walking through that was just so cool, looking at what looked like marble pillars, and you go up and you knock on them, and they're actually big PVC pipes.
Wow.
That are just painted to look like marble pillars. There was Let's Make a Deal, the game show. My very first roommate, actually, after I moved out of my brother's place, I got an apartment, and my very first roommate was actually hired and brought down to work on Let's Make a Deal as a production assistant.
Wow.
There was another show called Adventures in Wonderland that was on the Disney Channel.
Right, right.
That was kind of like a contemporary take on Alice in Wonderland, and the sets for that were just phenomenal. So there was always some kind of buzz going on, and, you know, it seemed to always be famous people coming through the studios, you know, either to visit or to work.
Right. There, you know, I've heard a lot about, you know, movie producers and directors and the filmmakers not wanting to come over from the West Coast to Central right. Florida because
right.
because it was also a theme park. I mean, there was also guests
right.
walking through, and they didn't like the idea of guests walking
right.
through sets and
right.
being able to kind of witness the magic happening. Did everyone kind of know that immediately once the park opened, or how long did that take to come into effect?
You know, it's interesting because if anyone remembers going on the actual walking tour, when they had the walking tour through the studios, one portion of that would take you through the sound stages. And you could actually look down through these big windows onto the stage as production was going on. And usually, if there was actual live production going on, unfortunately, the actors had the producers or directors, whoever, they had the option to ask them to, like, close the shades, if you will,
yep.
In front of those windows so
okay.
you can really look down. Because sometimes, you know, they felt like it could be distracting, but There were more, I think more times than not, where there was a lot of just really cool stuff going on, and guests could look down and see what was happening. And for the most part, I don't think the actors really seemed to mind very much.
Oh.
I think, to me, it just really enhanced the tours a whole lot. I know a lot of times when I was working either on internal productions or as an assistant and stuff, I'd be working in the post group. Which used to be there where they did all the post-production, and they had these big windows that, you know, where the guests would go through. It was like the weirdest thing, because you're sitting there, like, editing your film or your, you know, documentary, whatever it is you're working on, and all of a sudden a whole group of people would just kind of, like, walk by and be looking at you in these big windows, and a lot of times you would just hold up these goofy signs, you know, don't feed the editor or something like that, you know, and,
yeah.
you know, wave at the people and kind of have fun with it.
Yeah. No, that's cool. It's so weird. It's almost like a mystery of how, you know, how this was at one point. This is gonna be this great thing. It's gonna be a theme park. It's gonna be a production facility. We're gonna
yeah.
bring, you know, Orlando's gonna become the Hollywood of the East, and obviously with Universal opening with the same idea.
Yeah.
And then I remember reading at one point, Eisner had the idea to build sound stages right across the street, right across
yeah.
right over where like the Coronado Springs Resort is now. Kind of away from the hustle and bustle of the theme park.
Yeah.
And that, of course, never happened, but
I remember probably one of the more popular films that was shot there was Passenger 57 with Wesley Snipes.
Right, yep.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it was shot there.
and they actually shot a portion of that there, and then they also rented some like warehouse space off property where they shot a bunch of scenes for that, too.
Huh.
But yeah.
Wow. So now backing up, now we went over kind of where we were with MGM and how it got started and stuff.
Yeah.
Can I ask the question real quick?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
So back to the shows before we kind of move on.
Yeah.
Did you actually like help Imagineer write any of the shows that were actually being done at that time?
No, that wasn't really part of what WDI did. I mean, a big part of my job, though, was writing the spiel for the tour guides who were like giving either the walking tours mm-hmm. or the shuttle tours. So I worked very, very closely with like the producers and those people to get the information and find out what was coming and get information about what they were shooting and stuff. Oh, wow. I remember after The Rocketeer came out, for example, do you remember that?
Yeah.
Remember, real quick story, side note. When I was a kid and that came out, what, was it 95, 6, something like that?
Maybe, yeah.
Probably must have been around 93, I think.
It might have been, you're right. I remember my grandfather, I was like so enthralled with it, actually made a Rocketeer hat for me.
Yeah.
So 95 was 11, 10, so 8-ish. I remember he took an old top of a Clorox bottle, fan and made it for me. Oh, I was enthralled with that movie.
That's awesome.
I hate to one-up you, but at one point we actually got the actual helmets from the movie that we put on display, and a couple of us were goofing around, and we would put the helmets on and try them on.
Oh, wow.
So somewhere I've got some pictures with me wearing the actual Rocketeer helmets.
That's cool. Do they still have them there?
I doubt it. I doubt it. I don't know whatever happened to those.
I was going to say, I could see if one could fall off the back of a truck for me, but...
Yeah, right.
So go ahead. Sorry about that.
No.
What I was going to say before is, speaking of the Rocketeer, one of the things that they also brought down was one of the iconic buildings in the movie was this place called the Bulldog Cafe, and it was a building that actually looked like a bulldog, and they actually disassembled that set, and they shipped it down to us, and we reassembled it on our back lot, and... That stood back there as part of the shuttle tour for a while.
Wow.
I kind of remember it, but I...
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Let me ask you this one.
The Golden Girls house, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about. Why did they take down the residential street buildings? Do you know? I mean...
I think just over time, they started coming up with ideas on how they could reuse that space to eventually where it got to the point where it is now. And it's pretty much all gone.
Right.
Which is sad.
Directors and filmmakers weren't using it right, so they axed it. And...
Yeah, I think it was expensive to maintain the facades. I mean, are just facades, yep. Right? The styrofoam and all that in the Florida weather, they get beat up pretty bad, so I think it was expensive to maintain.
Okay, yeah.
I loved it around Christmas time. That's...
Yeah.
You saw the lights on the houses. Yeah.
So. At one point, I actually was designing for the Bat because sometimes I kind of bled over from show writing into what they call SQS show quality, which is, you know, in set design and stuff like that. And at one point, I came up with a concept. They were bringing down the cow from City Slickers from that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And they needed a place to put it, so I designed this really cool kind of like OK Corral-style ranch.
Oh, cool.
For the back lot area, but it never came to be.
Oh, man.
I think they wound up moving the cow out to Fort Wilderness.
Oh, wow.
You're talking like with a lot of things you've done. If you can, just... it's been a little while since you've been working there, but...
Yeah.
What were, like... let's just take Disney Hollywood Studios for right now. Like, what did you really have your hand in making it and writing and doing and... What off the top of your mind is one of the best things you did there?
Probably Great Movie Ride, I'd say. I didn't actually write the original script for that. There were some really talented show producers and writers that did that. And it was up and running for a couple years before I was hired on. But shortly after I came to Imagineering, they asked me to kind of go in and just kind of freshen up the script.
Mm-hmm.
And... look at like the choreography in some of the scenes that take place inside the ride. So I'd say that was pretty cool. There's, for the longest time, you know, I could tell my kids, when you go out there, listen and, you know, see if they say this because your dad wrote that and they would never believe me. And then I'd show them the script, you know, and they come back and they go, gee, you know, they really are still saying that. So.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool.
And I'm sure they're still saying it even to today, so.
Yeah. Although they're getting ready to, like, change out the Great Movie.
Right. The whole TMC partnership. And.
Hopefully some of my stuff will survive. We'll see.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, them switching over with TMC and everything like that?
I think it could be a great thing, to be honest. I love Robert Osborne. He's going to be doing the new pre-show in there.
Absolutely.
You know, I think if it, depending on how it's handled, it could be a really good thing. I'm not opposed, you know, to change and modification, and I think it's important for them to keep the attractions fresh. So, I don't anticipate that there will be, like, major profound changes, because there are a lot of audio animatronics in that attraction.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, just logistical concerns and things like that, that, it, you know, where I don't think it would be practical for them to change out major sections, but I could see them probably changing out one or two scenes.
Yep.
Or updating. Yeah.
You, speaking of that, and that's a good segue, I think you were telling us before there were some other movies that they were considering right when they were planning GMR that you know, didn't make the cut.
Yeah, you know, one of the cool things about working at WDI is that you do get to see a lot of really cool, like, conceptual stuff, or you're just in on the process of, like, early brainstorming and conceptual development. And I do remember seeing, like, an older script, one of the original scripts for Great Moments of the Movie. You're right, that's what it was called. Before the Great Movie Ride, it was called Great Moments at the Movies. And in that script, there were references to the jazz singer. There was Little Caesar with Edward G. Robinson.
Huh.
Now they've got James Cagney in there now, but I think originally that was going to be Edward G. Robinson. There was actually a whole big scene that they were going to do with Ghostbusters.
Wow. And
that was going to be a major scene.
Really?
What's that?
Really?
Wow.
why did they go for... I feel like... Wow, why did they not go for Ghostbusters?
Especially at that time, I mean, that was the biggest thing. And I know... Because they ended up at Universal, I think, too. And Universal had it, right? Around the early 90s, they had it.
It might have been licensing. Honestly, I don't know why. Maybe. I'm assuming it was licensing issues or something.
Right.
Actually, you know, kind of an interesting thing, like the Casablanca scene. For those who have been on the attraction, when you're going through, you come across a scene where you see Rick and I can't remember her name, Elsa, maybe? Or no, not Elsa, I'm thinking Frozen, right?
Disney's now going to think, like, you know what? I think I'm with the Frozen.
right now, the scene stands, it's the scene where they're on the airport.
Yeah.
And he's saying, you know, here's looking at you, kid, basically, with the airplane in the background. And a little bit of trivia, that airplane that's in that scene, that's an actual airplane that was in the movie. And when they matched the numbers on the fuselage, they discovered that was not only the same model airplane, but that was the actual airplane that was in the film.
Wow.
That's what rumor, you know, tells me.
Wow.
But that scene was originally going to be the scene from Rick's Cafe. And it was going to have, Dooley Wilson singing As Time Goes By in there. So, but that got swapped out for Here's Looking at You, Kid.
Wow.
And one other thing that's kind of interesting to note, as you're going into the Wizard of Oz scene at the very end, you kind of come around a corner and you see Sorcerer Mickey, right, on the mountain in the scene, famous scene from Fantasia. Well, that was actually originally going to be a transition area into the Wizard of Oz scene, and that was going to be the tornado that took you into the Wizard of Oz, right?
Oh, wow.
And if you look at it carefully, you can kind of see that it looks kind of like a tornado shape. And on that screen, they were going to have a flying cow and all those iconic images, you know, the
house
and on her bicycle and stuff like that.
Right.
And then you would transition into the Wizard of Oz scene. But I think what happened is they realized that nowhere in the Great Movie Ride did they have the most famous Disney movie star, Mickey Mouse, right?
Right, right.
So there he is in the scene from Fantasia.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. So we talked about GMR and Disney Hollywood Studios. Now, did you work at any of the other theme parks other than just Disney Hollywood Studios?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Animal Kingdom didn't exist back then, so we can rule that one out. But but yeah, I did some work on in the Magic Kingdom. Did some work on the Jungle Cruise. If you ever go to the Magic Kingdom now and you're standing in the queue area for the Jungle Cruise,
yep,
you hear these really corny announcements. It sounds like an old-time radio broadcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wrote a lot of those really corny bad jokes.
Wow.
So you can throw me. the Barker Bird, you know. So yeah, I did some enhancements there. Some stuff, a little bit at Epcot. So yeah, I got around.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do any of those stick out, you know, like, a lot in your mind all throughout? I know there's so many things we did through all the parks. But which ones actually through all the parks really just, like, stand out in your mind, like, wow, I did this. This is pretty amazing.
The Jungle Cruise, for sure. That was kind of cool. I remember one time, at the time, they were really kind of retheming the whole queue area there. And the set designer came around asking if any of us had any props or anything we wanted to give to her, donate to her, that she thought might work on in the theming. So somewhere there should be a giant African scorpion or Madagascar scorpion or something enclosed in glass that I gave her. And then I also got a bunch of, my dad was a pipe smoker, and he had all these really cool, like, hand-carved pipes. So I was able to get some of those slipped in there.
Oh, wow.
You always hear stories about, you know, Imagineers, like, slipping in the names of, like, family and friends and stuff that. And, you know, there are all kinds of ways that we would do that. But, you know, when you're standing in line for the Jungle Cruise, one of the announcements that you hear is talking about a boat coming in, piloted by a guy named Skipper Doug. And Doug was my best friend. Who I grew up with all my life, so I kind of honored him a little bit and made him Skipper Doug.
That's awesome.
At the Jungle Cruise. So
wow, that's such a great cue too. I love that cue. That's really really cool. Oh. That's really cool.
Disney instead of taking something from them. That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
just to kind of plug my site real quick. But if you go on my website, WD with me. I've got a blog on there, and I've been putting up different, like, stories and things about different experiences I've had. There's a story on there about when I got the chance to walk through Splash Mountain while it was still under construction, and I got to come out on the very top where the big drop is, you know, before the ride vehicles go down.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty spectacular view that I won't forget.
Wow.
It's just, I mean, there are just so many cool experiences that you get to have working as an Imagineer I was only there for a short time. I would have loved to have been there a lot longer. And guys who've been there for 10, 15, 20 years, I mean, the stories that they can tell would just blow you away.
Right.
So.
Yeah, wow. I don't know, going back to Jungle Cruise, I don't know if you heard, there's rumors that there's going to be a Jungle Cruise restaurant, I guess, like sit-down dining kind of across from Jungle Cruise, where Sunshine Tree Terrace is now. It used to be Aloha Isle, but sort of right there. It's supposed to be, I guess, Jungle Cruise themed restaurant, so.
I could see that.
Yeah, you know.
I could see that. I actually, one of the things as a show writer that I would often be asked to do is come up with, like, nomenclature for different little attractions or rides or signs or things like that. And I remember one time they wanted to do a food cart out by Pirates of the Caribbean, right? So, and it was going to be, it was going to, they were going to theme it to look like a pirate's cart that was filled with booty and gold and beads and, you know, stuff like that. And then you could just walk up and order, you know, probably a slice of pizza or something.
Right.
So they were asking for names, and I came up with a bunch of names. And the name, this is one of my favorite ones that I came up with, was called Pieces of Eight. And Pieces of Eight, spelled A-T-E.
So, that's pretty good. Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I would have worked with the Pirates movies that are out, and, well, the other one gets made. But, yeah, so, all right.
I'm real big on puns, so.
No, me too.
Any puns you want to use, just use them. So, we kind of covered Disney Hollywood Studios and everything like that. Now, I think, just to finish this little segment before we go on to our other little part of it, how was Disney Hollywood Studios when you left it? What was it like when you left compared to today?
Compared to today, it was, you know, back then it was still, I think, in its, a lot in its original classic form, mm-hmm. from when it's still open. They still had the Monster Sound Show there, which was one of my favorite attractions, where you would go in and they would show you how they did sound effects and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a wonderful movie that would play with Martin Short before that. They were still doing active tours of the studios, both a walking tour mm-hmm. and a shuttle tour. So that was happening. Production was starting to wind down a little bit. They were still doing animation production out there. So there was a lot more live production going on back then than there certainly is now. And that, I think, just gave the studios just a very different feel, because now it certainly is just really focused on being just a theme park with no live production.
Right. Kind of a shell of its former self, right? I mean,
well,
you know,
yeah,
without the production
way,
there.
Yeah, in some ways.
Trying to say a facade of itself.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things, and Mike and I have talked a lot about this in prior shows and even off our shows, but, you know, comparing to Universal, which right now, you know, the big arms race between Disney and Universal.
Right.
At its height, I think, right now, and that it's been years, and which is great for fans,
right.
You know, but what's interesting is Universal is actually using, not to the extent of, I think, what they had planned on, but they're still using the studios in Florida for some shows. I just saw the other day, I think it's like The Voice, maybe not The Voice. There was some show, American Ninja Warrior, I think it is.
Okay.
It's gonna be filmed there. So, I mean, a small thing, but, you know, Jimmy Fallon Live was there last year. It's surprising that, you know, Disney hasn't tried to capitalize more on Hollywood Studios and trying to get more production back there. And I know, obviously, you know, who knows the reasonings, and it's, you know, financially probably wasn't you know, advantageous for folks to come out to Florida versus stay in LA. But it's just interesting, you know, when you figure with ABC and ESPN and all the properties they now own with Marvel and Lucas, and there's nothing that they could have, that, you know, Iger could send to Hollywood Studios. You know what I mean? They can do anything, any of the shows on ABC, you know, but they haven't done anything, which is, it's really interesting to me.
I'm assuming that's a strategic decision made at very high levels for that. You know, I personally would love to see a little bit of production coming back to the studios.
Right.
Most of what they shot there was what they call second unit stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the main production. It was like ancillary scenes, like when they shot Passenger 57. You know, it was only a few key scenes. It wasn't the entire movie.
Right.
And then TV production. You know, when they set up shop for the Mickey Mouse Club or Let's Make a Deal, stuff like that.
Right.
But I think it would be really kind of cool to bring back more production at the studios, and maybe someday they will.
Yeah.
You know, it's always hard to say.
Right. But, yeah. So that's a great segue into our kind of second half of our future discussion today. Hollywood Studios in the future, and talking about some of the rumors, you know, The hat is the Mickey, the Sorcerer Mickey's hat is now taken down.
I was not sad to see that go.
I was just saying, yeah. No, I think most of our listeners probably weren't. So that's great. That's gone. But back to Lot Tour also closed down. Yeah. You know, so that was a loss there. A Star Wars themed land is potentially on the horizon. There's been a lot of rumors and discussion about that. You know,
take one at a time, Greg, because there's a lot here that he might want to comment on, just because.
Yeah. Let's.
Because he's in the parks every day doing his tours and stuff. So, sure. Going back real quick to the hat taken down and the backlot tour, just to put those two together, because those two, you know, you were totally around for. Obviously, you don't miss the hat being taken down. I don't think anybody really does. What do you think they're going to do with the whole facade now that pinnacle is taken down?
I don't know. I guess is why I'm pausing so long. It's hard for me to. Hopefully, not a whole lot. You know, one thing that Disney always does when they build their parks is they always have what they call a carrot, an iconic big structure that is the focus of the park. You know, the Magic Kingdom is obviously Cinderella Castle, Tree of Life in Animal Kingdom, Epcot, Spaceship Earth, and in Disney Studios, it's the Chinese Theater.
Right.
And when they put the hat up and obstructed that view, I think it really changed the dynamic of the park in a lot of ways. So hopefully they'll keep that down and keep that. I think it's a wonderful view to be able to walk in and look down the street and see the Chinese Theater, you know, as the focal point. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they put like a little stage up or something there where they could bring in some small acts or something like that, but
right.
Hopefully they'll keep that area fairly clear.
Right, because there's a whole, you know, generation of people who basically grew up knowing that hat is there,
not the beauty
that is behind it.
Yeah, I was actually at the studios on the grand opening day, and that was, you know, something I remember was just the impression of walking in and looking down the street and seeing that Chinese Theater there, and just because it's such an iconic feature, you know. Hopefully they'll leave that view as it was originally intended.
Right. And now the backlot tour, another thing. Just what were your thoughts of what they're doing with that right now?
You know, backlot tour's got a special place in my heart because that was a big part of my day-to-day work out there. You know, both the walking tour and the shuttle tour. I don't know. I guess I've got really mixed feelings about it. When a lot of the production went away, I think a lot of the value of that shuttle tour and the walking tour went away.
Right.
You know, when they took the facades down, when they, you know, even the New York Street backlot isn't really the same experience as when I worked out there. So I guess I've got mixed feelings about it. I'd probably feel a lot stronger if they were still doing production, but decide to take those tours away. The fact that they're not doing production out there, maybe there are some better ways that space can be used after all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was kind of tough when they had the boneyard with the old cars and stuff.
And
it was just really just a, you know.
Well, I want to know what they're going to do with Walt's private jet.
Yeah, when we heard it was going to close, that was the first thing I think we tweeted out. Like, what's going to happen to the private plane?
There's a private airport about 2 miles away from me in Chester, Connecticut. I'm sure Waylon would love to buy that, and then I can just ride it all day.
Yeah. It's probably going to wind up in Saratoga Springs on top of a building somewhere or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right? I hope not. I hope if they're not, you know, whatever they're going to do, be it they land back there or whatever. I hope they take that jet and they ship it right back to California and they put it somewhere over in Disneyland. So, go ahead, Greg. What else you got?
So, so the name change, you know, this whole idea of Bob Iger, you know, to the CEO, accidentally, it seemed accidentally anyway that he slipped in an earnings call back in March and dropped, you know, actually entertained a question from a shareholder who asked about this name change thing to what was Disney MGM Studios now? Disney Hollywood Studios, I don't know, now a third potential name. And there's a lot of rumors that it could become something like Disney's Hollywood Adventure Park, or, you know, so taking the studios completely out of it.
Right.
Have you heard anything about this at all, or?
I've not.
Basically Iger basically confirmed it. He kind of was forced into it, but said, yeah, we haven't announced anything, but, you know, we're not announcing anything right now, you know, so it's going to happen, but. So right. He kind of stumbled over himself, but
yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to change the name to what? I have no idea.
Yeah.
Back to MGM.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there was a tie into Turner. You know,
that'd be interesting. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I think that relationship is going to bring hopefully some new breath back into the classic part of the studios. I think. Star Wars, you know, there's a lot of potential for them to do more with that, obviously.
Definitely.
I always love the Muppet section, you know, of the studios.
Yeah, I think Mike and I both love the Muppet section. We've talked about how underutilized the Muppets are, I think, overall. I mean,
yeah. Actually got,
But, all right, so I got two quick last things for future rumors, and then we could... just a couple of closing things with you. One, what was it like working under Eisner?
So I can only say that, you know, is what the culture was like under Mike Eisner when I was there. And honestly, I mean, I thought there was, again, a lot of really, he brought a lot of excitement, at least early on. You know, I left the company long before he did, but when I was there, there was a lot of excitement that was going on in the company. You know, new parks being built, just new visions being brought to the company that weren't necessarily there before. I found it to be very stimulating. People really liked what he was bringing to the company, at least early on. You know, I can't really speak for, you know, near the end of his reign, but when I was there, it was a good thing. I liked having him as our CEO. Awesome. And Frank Wells, you know, just made a great team.
He did. Eisner's one of my heroes in business and how he ran things, and So compared to, you know, when you were working and such to today, Disney world in a whole, I know the talk of how kind of with the college program, the customer service has kind of gone down, the parks are a little, you know, a sprucing up, we'll put it nicely.
Right.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that? Just kind of in closing on this whole thing.
You know, again, just a really interesting question. People ask me a lot about, you know, what it was like to work at Disney, and sometimes you hear people say, you know, that they hear it's like a horrible place to work sometimes, or, you know, they've lost their touch. Disney is a giant, big company like any other big company out there, and there's going to be good, there's going to be bad. I think, you know, as a cast member working there, a lot of it depends who your managers are, who, you know, what your job is, what you're doing out there. I certainly never had one complaint. I love going to work every single day. And even when I worked at the Contemporary Resort at the front desk, I just really liked my job. It was just an amazing culture to work within. got to meet some really interesting people. You know, even at the front desk, I met, you know, some famous athletes and actors and, you know, interesting things like that. I got wonderful training that has stayed with me throughout my entire career. So I think a lot of that still holds true to this day, but the company is much, much bigger than when I was there. You know, anytime you've got that kind of growth, just because of the sheer numbers of people working there, you know, you're going to have good and you're going to have bad. And sometimes, you know, there'll be missteps. Sometimes it's going to be hard to manage that growth. But, you know, I would say to this day that it's a great company to work for. It's a very inspirational company. I think if you've got the talent and the savvy and the skills, those will be recognized and there's opportunity for you.
Well, I gotta say, you definitely pull on my heartstrings. That's exactly where I want to work, is the front desk of the Contemporary, because yeah. I can't get enough of the monorail. Did you work the monorail at all?
Yeah, I used to, on my breaks, you know, sometimes hop on the monorail and just kind of ride around and stuff, and what the heck, you know, I mean.
You're there, you know.
back then, you know, again, I'm going back a few years before they remodeled the Contemporary, but they used to have this wonderful, huge, big game room right next to the front desk area. And right adjacent to the game room, there was a movie theater where you could go in, and they would just constantly be playing the Disney classic movies. Oh, and wow. I spent many a break, you know, in there just kind of watching the movies. And it was a trip. Wow. There's a picture on my website of me on the very front page overlooking the Magic Kingdom, and that picture was actually taken just recently, not too long ago, of me on the top observation deck of the Contemporary Resort overlooking the park. So, I mean, if you know where to go, there's some spectacular views that you can get of the park and the rest of the Disney property.
That's amazing, that's Brian. Cool. And just one last thing, I know me and Greg were talking about it, if you don't mind. The biggest thing that we have when we go down there, and it's something that's been happening, is it seems like, and I'm sure, just so you, given the tours and everything, which we're definitely going to ask about all that just after this.
Yeah, sure.
What do you think about the way that they're kind of cramming people into these parks?
Yeah.
No crowding. There's no, you know, I remember back in even the late 90s, there was a cap. Hey, yeah. Magic Kingdom's closed for these hours. We're done. Yeah. Because you're going to overdo your stay. What's your thoughts on that? Because me and Greg have some kind of negative ones. We want to see where you're at with this one.
So, you know, depending on what time of year you go there, that's one of the advantages of living here in Orlando, is that you know when to go to the parks, not to. But definitely I could see during the peak seasons, you know, even the locals stay away because they know the parks are going to be crazy busy. And people pay a lot of money. I mean, Disney just raised their average ticket price to over $100 for a single day. You know, you talk a family of four, that is a lot of money. And yeah. If you're paying that kind of money and you get into one of their theme parks and you're spending, you know, 2 hours in line and you only get to see a couple of attractions, you know, it's tough. I know they've got, you know, all kinds of people that analyze all this kind of stuff, and they look at the numbers and the traffic flow and, you know, all of that. I'm hoping with the new Magic Band technology is that, you know, continues to evolve and roll out, and the FastPass system continues to evolve, that's going to kind of help with some of the backlog that you're talking about.
Right.
But I'm right with you, man. I mean, it can be incredibly frustrating when you get into the parks and, you know, it's just like crammed, filled with people, and you're spending more time standing in line than seeing the parks, which is what you want to do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we were looking at wait times.
Unless you're in the Jungle Cruise queue.
Exactly, yeah.
Time.
We were looking at the wait times for, I think, what was it, Greg? Like, the 12th or 15th or something like that. We were just gathering at the wait times in Magic Kingdom in January, which is supposed to be an off-peak season. And we had about 2-hour wait rides on most of the big attractions, like Spaceship Earth, Pirates. They were all, it was like 2 hours of wait lines, which... blows my mind away.
You know, FastPass Plus has definitely helped out. You mentioned that, Brian. Yeah. It's helped out a ton, and it makes the experience a lot better. I mean, I loved it. I absolutely loved it, and it's funny. I thought I would hate it. You know, when it first came out, I was like, oh, there's all this stuff. You gotta go online. You gotta make an account. Right. You gotta wear this wristband thing. You gotta do all, it's gonna be such a pain. It's actually a lot easier, and you can go on. Yeah. You know, I was telling you off here, my wife and I, my daughter going down in a few weeks. And, you know, I went on the other night and I got our tickets ahead of time and, you know, selected our fast passes already for, you know, for the day we're going to Magic Kingdom, for example. So it makes it a lot easier. You can kind of plan around it and, you know, okay, hey, I got my 3 attractions in the morning or whatever. And then I know in the afternoon I'm going to get a couple and hopefully, you know, you'll have a good experience. So,
you know, it's definitely a tough balance that they have. And I hate to be the person that has to try and figure out the traffic flow in the parks. I guess the one thing I can say is that, you know, I mean, gosh, I haven't worked for them for so long, officially worked for them anyway, but I guess I still feel like I'm the company guy, right? But I do feel like they are... that they feel the pain of you guys too.
Yeah.
And they're trying to find, you know, the best ways they can to, you know, get you guys through, you guys, all of us, any guests, through the attractions, and minimize those wait times. But it can't be easy.
And just a quick note on the ticket thing too. Just a quick story. Me and my girlfriend went down the Palm Coast, out on the Atlantic side. Her grandparents live. We go down there a couple times a year, and we thought about doing one day at Disney. And we did the math. And just to go back on your ticket price things.
Yeah.
Something in the ballpark of $225 for 2 people with the tax.
Yeah.
That's not including, you know, your eating fees and your parking and your monorail expenses. Yes, I add those in. But it would have cost us over $500 just to do one day.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, with gas, and it's crazy. So,
yeah.
All right, Brian. Well, thank you so much for answering these questions. But before you go, tell us, please, more about WDWithMe.com. See, I said it right.
Yeah, WDWithMe.com. So that's my website. If people are interested, you know, they can go check it out. And they can find information about how to get in touch with me if they're interested in coming down and visiting the parks. I offer myself as a kind of like a personal tour guide, if you will, to take them through and share stories and tales and point out things that they maybe would not normally get to see or hear about. You know, I'll show them things from an Imagineer's point of view. You know, the fact in Epcot that they use 3 different shades of white paint on the American Adventure and why they do that, or why the window shutters in Liberty Square are hung crooked, or, you know, I don't know, there are lots of different fun facts that people won't really think about.
That's really cool.
And I love sharing that kind of information. So there's information how they can find me there. There are links to my Facebook page, so please go to my Facebook page and like me. You can find me, it's official WD with me on Facebook. And my Twitter feed, please follow me on Twitter. WD with me Brian is my Twitter handle. And you know, read my blogs. I try and get a blog up at least once a week. To you know, kind of share some really cool behind-the-scenes stories and tales of an Imagineer.
That's awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely, I think, you know, keep reading those and checking out what you've been up to, Brian. And this is great. I thank you for coming on and joining us tonight.
Yeah, well, I'd love to be back some other time in the future if you guys, you know, will have me.
Definitely. Definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anytime you want to come on, you just tell us, all right?
All right.
All right, Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
It was definitely a lot of fun.
Take care.
All right.
Take care now. All right. Well, that was a great feature discussion with Brian. And if you're listening to Brian Collin from Imagineer, some of the things that he said was mind-blowing. And we can't thank him enough. If you're listening to Mixler, thanks, first of all. If you're not, we'll send the Twitter link out for our Podbean. And because we got sick of iTunes, not, you know, doing their thing, we went on to TuneIn Radio, which I think's just better. But
yeah, so TuneIn, and it's a lot easier, so find us in there, too.
Now, Greg, I did see your one missed typo on this. And it's
I know.
Will not be April 22nd because
that's today.
I haven't invented time travel yet. I will, though. our next show is, what, in 2 weeks? Is
May 7th.
May 7th?
May 6th.
May 6th?
Sorry, May 6th.
I'm close to my 31st birthday. Alrighty. Reminder, send us your park or trip planning questions, topics on Twitter, Facebook, and email. Greg, what are those?
Twitter at Resort Ears, Facebook.com/Resort Ears, or ResortEars@gmail.com.
I really love that pausing, like you didn't have it in front of you. I appreciate that. so, also, vote for us in the Disney Podcast Survivor Poll. Greg, what's that all about?
So, our good buddy, Barry, is it?
I think you finally put his first name on there.
Yeah. Disney Podcast Survivor, so he puts his poll together. He is kind of doing a collection of all the podcasts, Disney fan podcasts, and we've been on there, actually. We were top 10, actually, a few weeks ago, so pretty cool. And it's all around the world. You know, there's podcasts from everywhere, so vote us for us if you like the show. If you don't like it, don't say anything. But
you can put the negative comments. I like answering those back. They make my day.
Yeah. So... Yeah.
Anything else we got before we sign off?
That's about it. You know, again, special thanks to Brian Collins from WDWithMe.com for Imagineer for joining us on the show tonight. And, I think we definitely would hope to have him on the show again real soon to talk about maybe perhaps another park and other topics. So.
Absolutely. We just scratched the surface. So many questions came into my head as he was talking. So, all right, well, ready for the music to cue it up? All right, well, folks, that'll do it for us here in the Connecticut studio, so to speak. Have a magical night, and until next time, remember, get your ears on. Oh, for God's sakes, Greg. Really?